Want to virtualize your biggest workloads? Bring the performance of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Hello, and welcome to part three in our series of TechNet Radio discussions in a series that we're calling Virtualization Did You Know? This is where we discuss the facts and facets of Microsoft's virtualization solution. And if you're only using some other virtualization platform, these are facts that you probably didn't know, but you definitely should. My name is Kevin Remde. I'm a senior technology evangelist on the U.S. developer and platform evangelism team at Microsoft, and I'm your TechNet Radio host today. As this is part three, our discussion is already in progress, and we're talking with Jeff Woolsey, who is a principal program manager focusing on Microsoft server and virtualization technologies. So let's talk to Jeff. All right. So now I want to touch a little bit about the kind of performance or the kind of, what would you expect out of our virtualized machines and large common workloads that people associate with those workloads that are kind of difficult to virtualize. And so my next fact has to do with a recent benchmark test where ESG found that a single server running Hyper-V VMs, 12 Hyper-V VMs, could support the requirements of 48,000 Exchange users. Is that true?
Yes. So let me provide some context around this, because I want to be very mindful to my friends and good partners in the Exchange organization. Let's be very clear about something. This test was done quite simply to point out and test the scalability of Hyper-V itself. Let's be super clear that when it comes to Exchange is designed to scale out. Okay, that's the whole point and why it's architected in the way it is. It's designed to scale out so that you never have, you would never have simply 48,000 mailboxes running on a single server. It's designed to scale out across multiple servers and provide you HA, and that's part of the HA architecture, intrinsic to Exchange, and we think that's awesome. But this test was to point out that we wanted to show that if we did stack a whole bunch of virtual machines, how did Hyper-V perform? From a memory standpoint, from a CPU standpoint, from an I/O standpoint, because if you look historically, there's always been, you can't virtualize SQL or you can't virtualize Exchange, just can't handle the I/O, and quite simply, that's just never been a problem for Hyper-V. In fact, this ESG report showed quite simply, it ran over 48,000 mailboxes. 48,000 Exchange users on a single server, and basically it still met all of the performance requirements and all the scalability requirements of Exchange, and that was the point we were trying to make. However, we didn't stop there. We had ESG also test SQL Server, and what they did was they ran pretty much the industry standard workload. They ran OLTP workloads on SQL Server. They ran it on a 2-processor VM, a 4-processor VM, 8, 16, 32, all the way up to 64 virtual processors. And what they found and what they demonstrated, and you can easily find this just by doing a search on ESG and Hyper-V and SQL, basically that they found out that you saw within the virtual machine nearly perfect linear scalability within a virtual machine. Quite simply, as you added more virtual processors, Hyper-V just scaled to the box. And it was absolutely startling to everybody just how great it was. And it wasn't a surprise to us, because quite simply, we've been partnering very closely with all of our teams here at Microsoft. And let's be super clear here. If you're running Exchange, if you're running Dynamics, if you're running SharePoint, if you're running SQL and you're running Link, the absolute best way to run that is on Windows Server and Hyper-V managed by System Center. And there's a number of reasons for that. Let's start with the easiest one, which is test and validation. Every single day here at Microsoft, we are creating tens of thousands of virtual machines all running on Hyper-V. We are testing the operating systems, we are testing client, we are testing server, we are testing all of our workloads end to end. And if we do find an issue, we know best how to solve it. Is it in the hypervisor itself? Is it in the storage stack? Is it in the network stack? Is it in the application? Is there something we need to do to work to make it better? And so from a performance standpoint, we've tuned SQL, we've tuned all of our apps, and guess what? It runs spectacularly on top of Hyper-V. But you may be thinking, well, Jeff, what about my other workloads? Well, guess what? We also have done some great work with our partners at SAP. And in fact, I'm pleased to share that this last year, SAP, running their own benchmarks, ran SAP on Hyper-V on 2012 using a standard SAP three-tier configuration with SQL Server. And the world record is now owned by Hyper-V. And wow. What's great about this is this wasn't some crazy monster scale-up server with crazy amounts of cores and processors and storage. This was actually standard two-socket servers, the servers that everybody used that are most widely deployed on Earth. Guess what? SAP ran fantastically on Hyper-V, and they even wrote a benchmark. I'm sorry, even they wrote a white paper talking about the benchmarks that they used and how they did it. And this is all standard SAP benchmarks. Microsoft had nothing to do with this. So it's really amazing to show, you know, the work that we've been doing to make Windows run great, make all of our workloads run great, continues to show to reap massive rewards. And we're seeing that the fruits of that in from both internally as well as from third parties on third-party applications and third-party testing labs. So we're very excited about all this.
Definitely, definitely. In the same context of third parties, I think it's really interesting to watch what's happening over the past year with regard to third-party, even operating systems that we support in virtualization. Number of Linux distributions we have that we support, and that we actually have a large, in fact, probably one of the largest support staffs of Linux operating systems is actually Microsoft. The fact that we now support and Oracle approves our support of Oracle workloads running on Hyper-V and running in Windows Azure. These are all great things, and it proves that we're leading the industry in those partnerships, and not only just Microsoft saying we do it best, but they are also saying we do it best as well.
And that's really a great point, Kevin. I had the opportunity of actually presenting at Oracle Open World this year. It was the first time I've ever done that. And one of the things we presented, I think, shocked a lot of people, because here's Microsoft at a keynote at Oracle. And what did we show off? Well, guess what? We showed off Oracle, Oracle Database, Oracle Linux, Oracle Java, all running up on Azure. Oh, and by the way, what is Azure's hypervisor? It's Hyper-V. It's the same hypervisor we deliver in Windows Server 2012 and Windows Server 2012 R2. And I think a lot of people tend to get confused because we call it Azure. We don't call it, like Windows Server in the cloud, but we call it Azure. And the reason why is because it's a service. We give it a different name, but let's be very clear here. It's the same Windows Server we provide our customers worldwide every day. And again, that allows us to take the learnings we have from running our public cloud and deliver those and deliver enhancements and new capabilities in the private cloud. So it's really this awesome virtuous engineering cycle, and it allows us to really reap those rewards. And in terms of interoperability, yes, we have major support for Linux on Hyper-V and in Azure. And just for those people who may or may not know how this works is basically, the Linux guys, they create this Linux kernel. And basically people are making changes and making adding new capabilities and features into the Linux kernel. And at some point they say, guess what? We're gonna release this kernel. They bless this kernel. And then the distributions, whether it's Red Hat, CentOS, Oracle, et cetera, they all grab a distribution and they put their name on it and they add their own customizations on top of that. But basically they're all using that kernel that's been blessed by Linus and his team. Well, Microsoft has been delivering core drivers and core capabilities into the Linux kernel now for many years. So it means when you go download the latest version of Red Hat or CentOS or SUSE or Oracle Linux or Debian Ubuntu and install it on Hyper-V, guess what? It just works. All the drivers are there. It's all plug and play. You don't need to install any tools. You don't need to install anything. Guess what? Plug and play just happens, picks up our storage controller, our network controllers, and everything just works. And because of that, customers deploying Hyper-V on premises and in their Microsoft private cloud, Linux runs great. And then on top of that, like I said, because Azure is running our hypervisor as well, guess what? Those distributions run great on Azure as well. So, you know, all of these major investments we've been making across the board just are continuing to reap rewards for us, and most importantly for our customers. So it's a lot of work we've been doing in cloud here.
I just add one additional point to that topic of running Linux well in an Hyper-V environment, and the new improvements in Server 2012 R2 Hyper-V, the fact that we can now support things such as dynamic memory in a Linux machine, the fact that we can now support a live backup of a running Linux workload running under Hyper-V. These are all things that have been dreams of the past, and now we are actually providing those.
Yeah, we've continued to add more capabilities and more enhancements to Linux guests. And a couple of the big ones, like you mentioned right there, was live backups. Another one is dynamic memory. So now we can do dynamic memory for Linux. And another thing a lot of people may not realize is we introduced Hyper-V replication with Hyper-V replica in 2012. And of course, we've enhanced it even more in 2012 R2. But guess what? It also means we can replicate Linux virtual machines. We're actually providing disaster recovery capabilities for Linux, and just try and do that with Linux tools. I mean, this is a capability and enhancement that everybody gets to take advantage of. And in fact, we've seen it firsthand when things like Hurricane Sandy hit. I received an email the day after Hurricane Sandy hit that literally some hosters on the East Coast had failed over to a secondary site and saved all of their customers, and their customers were working without any loss of service. All their VMs were running, and their primary site was under feet of water, and they were down for months. So, wow. You know, replica is something we take a lot of pride in because, you know, we worked very hard to make sure that we can help, you know, in these trying situations. And in R2, we've made it even better. And like I said, it's guest OS agnostic, so it works great for Windows, but it also works great for Linux too. So, you know, just huge investments across the board here.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think we've very well established the fact that Hyper-V does support many different platforms, many different application types, and even many different operating systems. So very, very good points there. Now, on that subject, kind of related to that, the subject of other vendors, my next fact has to do with System Center 2012 and the fact that we can manage multiple hypervisors from multiple vendors, as well as virtual machines that are running off-premises and in public cloud environments. How do we do that?
Yeah, there's actually this topic in and of itself is, like, I'm going to say this again, easily an hour in and of itself, but there's a couple of highlights I want to hit here. Absolutely, System Center is, you know, when we think of systems management, System Center just does so much. A lot of people are well used to using System Center for things like Operations Manager to monitor the health and performance of their applications, their operating systems, and it's so widely used, it's so prevalent, and it's important for monitoring not only your operating systems, but really your applications. And folks, if there's any point I want to get across today, is this is a huge gap I've seen literally for the last 10 years at Microsoft, is everybody gets focused on the hypervisor, the virtualization layer, and unfortunately, they're grossly underspending when it comes to systems management. And what happens is, honestly, at the end of the day, I really don't care if I'm running SQL in a physical machine or a virtual machine. I care that SQL is running well. I care that SharePoint is running well. I care that Exchange is running well. And in fact, if you just use System Center, we can help you solve problems. In fact, avoid problems completely because we're actually monitoring critical resources. And most importantly, the applications, Exchange, SharePoint, SQL, Link, Dynamics, those are the folks that actually write the management packs that go in the System Center. They know best how to manage their workloads. So System Center is the best way to manage those workloads. Then when it comes to managing multiple hypervisors, System Center can do that. VMM has the capability to plug into vCenter to manage VMware. We have the ability to plug in other hypervisors, for example, Xen. And then most importantly, what happens when you have hybrid cloud deployments? So for example, let's say you decide you want to plug in and move some virtual machines up to Azure, or you want to create some Azure applications or run some Azure services, you still want to be able to monitor those from your on-premises. Well, we have management packs that allow you to plug into System Center to even manage things that are running on Azure as well. So, you know, we're investing heavily in this area, and you're going to see us do even more there.
Fantastic. Good news. Now, on the topic of Windows Server and System Center, we have software-defined networking, and we covered a little bit of that earlier, but I want to talk a little bit more about some of those networking features, because I think there's a misunderstanding about how much those additional features around software-defined networking, or SDN, should cost. And so my fact is, with the software-defined networking features in Windows Server and System Center, you can achieve complete VM mobility without having to purchase an expensive solution.
Yeah, this is really amazing. And like I mentioned, software-defined networking is a huge topic in and of itself. But there's a number of key things that it really solves. One of them is the most key capability when it comes to software-defined networking is quite simply, it allows you to take your network to the cloud. I want to be able, for example, let's say I own my own private cloud and I want to be able to move things to Azure. Well, without software-defined networking, I'm going to have to re-network, re-IP, reconfigure, and hope that I got all the dependencies right and try and move it up there. Or to move it to a service provider, I'm going to have to do the same thing. Because of that complexity, it's very likely I'm just not even going to make the move in the first place. With software-defined networking, it's literally, hey, I want to take my network with me, and I want to be able to access my workloads remotely, but have it look like it's on the same network, even if it's running in a service provider or if it's running in Azure. And so software-defined networking allows me to do that. But another thing it allows me to do is, because we're virtualizing the network itself, it'll actually allows me to get by one of the biggest challenges in live migration, which is being able to live migrate across physical subnets. By definition, traversing a subnet means you're going to have a drop in connectivity and it's not going to be live anymore. Because network virtualization is actually employed, it actually allows us to get rid of this, because it makes it look like we literally have, you know, these large contiguous, we have these contiguous networks, and actually gives me the ability to get around this limitation and live migrate across physical subnets. And like I mentioned before, these are all capabilities that are built into Windows Server and System Center today.
Fantastic. I love that whole idea of the mobility that we get with that software-defined networking and the virtual networks, and a machine that's hosted in one location moving to another location. And typically what happened then is you had to readdress the machine, the hosting provider or service provider or whatever that subnet happened to be. You make a change to the IP address and suddenly your phone rings.
Yes.
Your phone rings because someone's service was expecting that IP address to be what it was and not what it is now. Not having to change those addresses, but simply moving machines around as needed, and they are all part of that virtual network that they're defined in, is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, so we're on our last one of the list, which I think is great. I think it's been a really fantastic discussion so far, and I'm really excited about this last item on our list. Hyper-V in Windows Server is leading the industry. Now, that is a very bold comment, and I want to ask you for your opinion on that and how that is.
Yes, and I know to a lot of people it may seem like a bold comment, but let me be very clear. Why take this comment, very much to heart, because a lot of people tend to realize or tend not to realize what's been happening in terms of Hyper-V. And I've been having a recurring conversation with customers now. It seems like every conversation seems to be like this. Jeff, 3 or 4 years ago, I decided to make an investment in virtualization. And there was VMware and Hyper-V was brand new. And while Hyper-V looked really interesting and looked really promising, I just wasn't sure because it was brand new. So we decided to make the investment with the other guys. Now it's 3 or 4 years later, and we're writing these really big checks to the other guys. Oh, and by the way, we already own everything that Microsoft. We already, have an enterprise agreement with Software Assurance. We have Windows Server and System Center, and now we're trying to figure out why we're writing these big checks to the other guys. And in fact, it seems like Microsoft is leading the industry. Is this really the case? And in fact, it's absolutely the case. So let's start with Server 2012. Let's start with what we shipped last year. This is August of 2012. Number one, we're the first hypervisor to ship with shared nothing live migration. This feature is long considered the holy grail of live migration. I can literally live migrate between two servers with no shared storage. All I need is a network cable. In fact, I've even had one of my colleagues, Ben Armstrong, he's actually demonstrated live migrating over a wireless NIC. Okay, we were the first ones to do shared nothing live migration.
So no cluster, just a network connection. That's
no, all. No cluster at all. And what's amazing about this, it means, is you can live migrate into a cluster, you can live migrate out of a cluster, and most importantly, you can live migrate between clusters. So that was, you know, we led the industry by providing that capability. We also were the first hypervisor to include built-in replication with Hyper-V Replica. We provided disaster recovery capabilities, that part of the platform built in Server 2012. We were the first virtualization platform with built-in network virtualization. We shipped this last year. So while the other guys are making big noise this year about it, guess what? We shipped it last year, and in fact, we're on our second release in 2012 R2. We're still the first and only virtualization platform to support 64 nodes and 8,000 VMs in a cluster. Other guys are still trying to catch us up to us. vSphere 5.5 still doesn't offer this. We're the only hypervisor that has SRIOV networking and live migration. And this is important because if you're doing scale-up workloads that need to deliver more than 10 gigabits into a VM, where you're probably going to team two 10-gigabit NICs and do 20 gigabits into a scale-up workload, if you're going to do that, you're not going to give up live migration. Well, the only hypervisor that does SRIOV and live migration together is Hyper-V, period. The other guys, sorry, they don't do that. It's one or the other. We're also the only hypervisor that offers true fiber channel in the VM. Folks, and Kevin, again, this is what we delivered last year. This is 2012. Yeah. Now here we are in 2012 R2. And we've continued to keep the foot down, our foot down on the gas pedal, because we've been listening very carefully to our customers to understand what are the real big challenges that you have and what are the capabilities we want to provide to meet those challenges. Another interesting challenge is guest clustering. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the cloud, people are used to guest clustering in their enterprise on a private cloud. But if they have to move it to a public cloud, guest clustering is almost unheard of. And the reason why is because you have to surface a physical LUN into a virtual machine. And because of that, cloud service providers don't want to do that. They don't ever want you to see the physical infrastructure. I will happily give you virtual machines and virtual storage and virtual networks, but I never want you to see the physical server, the physical storage, or the physical networking. Because the moment we do that, we've blurred the line between the tenant and the cloud service provider. Well, because of that, guest clustering is pretty much unheard of. Well, we wanted to solve that problem. So in Windows Server 2012, we're introducing, and we are the only hypervisor to provide production-ready shared virtual disks. And what's awesome about this is these are still virtual disks. They are shared, though, so that they are they can be used for guest clustering. We don't have any of the limits of the other guys. You want to do 2 nodes, 4 nodes, 8 nodes, 16 nodes, go for it. And from within the virtual machine, this storage looks like shared SAS. However, the shared storage is still a virtual disk. So you don't have to present the physical LUN. So what this means is everybody's happy. Customers can now do guest clustering in the cloud. Cloud service providers can provide guest clustering. And most importantly, they don't have to give up control of the physical infrastructure. So that's a really revolutionary new capability in Server 2012 R2. Another one is, I mentioned this already, is we are the only hypervisor with live migration via SMB Direct and RDMA. And again, these are two features that, again, vSphere 5.5, they don't have these. This allows us to dramatically improve the performance and scalability of live migration. And this becomes really important when you're talking about cloud deployment, not just one host or two hosts or 10 hosts or 20 hosts, but I'm talking hundreds of hosts and thousands of hosts running thousands and tens of thousands of VMs. Every second I can shave off of that has a huge, profound impact to my operational costs. So those are just a few of the ways that Hyper-V is quite honestly leading the industry, both in Server 2012 and now even further with Server 2012 R2.
Fantastic. So that's great when someone asks you the question, is Hyper-V in Windows Server leading the industry? The answer is yes. And we have a lot of great reasons for that. Jeff, this has been a fantastic conversation, and I really appreciate this. And that's really all the time we have today. So before we close, do you have any additional recommended resources that you'd like to direct our viewers to?
Absolutely. So first of all, I would definitely take a look at our In the Cloud blog. That's kind of where we're. Brad Anderson, our vice, our president for the Cloud and Enterprise Division, has been leading a whole bunch of discussions around a number of the topics I've talked about. We've got a bunch of blogs that go into these technologies in much greater depth with lots of links, and we've got videos. Also, as always, if you have technical questions, please go to technet.microsoft.com. It's a treasure trove of information about what's new, how these things work, walk you through all of this. If you're interested in understanding programmatically, hey, how do I deal with, you know, WMI, or if I'd like to plug into Hyper-V, you know, I didn't even talk about the extensible switch, the capabilities we've got there. Please make sure you check out msdn.microsoft.com. And of course, you can always check out Microsoft, www.microsoft.com, and look at our cloud resources. There's a tremendous amount of capabilities we're offering. And quite honestly, I just want to say a huge thank you to all of our customers. We value your input, your feedback, and we are thrilled to be able to deliver so much so quickly in this R2 release. And you're going to find that we are going to be delivering more based on all of your needs and requirements for the cloud and for your future. So thank you very much.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good news and a lot of great things to look forward to, it sounds like, I'm sure. Well, again, Jeff, thank you so much for your time today. And we will see you all again soon for another edition of TechNet Radio, Virtualization Did You Know?